Oh yeah, about to get my Cinema Stash rehash on.
Let's go!
What?
Oh yeah.
Podcasting from Chico, California, and home of the world's largest functional yo-yo. They are Cinema Stash Rehash. Join them as they talk movies, make fun of them, and discover how they fuel your everyday life paranoia. Let me welcome you to...
And welcome to the fourth episode of Cinema Stash Rehash. I am Jason McLendon, and I'm here with Wyatt Campbell.
What's up?
And Chris Mattson.
Hello.
And this episode's going to be on The Thing.
The Thing.
Yes.
John Carpenter's.
Exactly. Brilliant. 1982. One of the most crazy special effects movie that I've probably ever seen.
It was gnarly at the time.
Oh, it's gnarly today. It still holds up to this day. Basically, about a group of scientists in the middle of Antarctica that just encounter some amazing shit, and they have to somehow make it through.
By looking to a helicopter pilot, played by Kurt Russell, who basically is just drinking the entire movie.
Oh.
Getting wasted and solving scientists' problems for them in the Arctic.
Because,
I mean, am I the only one who's wondering why Kurt Russell is always relied on? It's like, let's see what Mac thinks.
It's true. He's the leader of the bunch.
Because, I mean, we need the drunk helicopter pilot to fucking solve these problems.
He was the leader before there was a leader. I mean, yeah. He was the leader. Even when Gary, I think his name was Gary.
Gary?
He was like, hey, Mac, I need to talk to you in the old...
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because this station that they're at has this plethora of characters that all have certain, you know, trades or specialties. Scientists. I mean, Childs isn't a scientist, but he's like security. I don't know. And then Knowles is the cook who's basically disco skating to Stevie Wonder while he cooks.
Exactly. But most of them, yeah. I mean, you know, Blair, I think he's probably the biologist, and there's Doc, who's actually a doc. And, you know, it's
helicopter pilot. And
yeah, I mean, he's definitely
a helicopter pilot who wears like a Yosemite Sam hat
and likes to get drunk while playing chess.
Yeah, but it's the Antarctica, and there's, you know, weird shit happens. You wear weird shit, and weird shit happens in Antarctica.
Oh my god. it's funny because you don't want to go to Antarctica. I mean, I was in Antarctica like maybe a few weeks ago, and it's a place that you don't really want to go. I happened upon this sushi restaurant, and it was the worst experience of my life.
Oh. Ah, welcome to Arctic Sushi, where we have the freshest ingredients in all Arctic. Please, sit.
Man, you guys are kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Surprised you get any customers at all. What the hell was that?
Nothing. Your ear. They check on you. What you have?
Jesus Christ!
See, it's fine. What'd I tell you? Very fresh.
What the fuck is... What the fuck is that? Serious. Jesus! Fire!
No, see, a char broiled, see, very fresh.
What the fuck is going on here, man? I got Moody Myrtle in the fucking kitchen, a burnt up man spider down there on the ground, and a Chinese guy at a fucking Japanese restaurant. What the fuck? You know what? Never mind. I don't even want to know. I'm fucking out of here.
Holy shit.
Okay, what on earth?
So yeah, that's kind of
Jason, wait, how do we know that you're you?
You see, what we're talking about here is an organism that imitates other life forms, and it imitates them perfectly. When this thing attacked our dogs, it tried to digest them, absorb them. and in the process shape its own cells to imitate them.
Okay, what on Earth?
Yeah. What the fuck happened? This place is a mess. Okay.
Let's just talk about the movie. So the movie starts. The movie starts out really strange. There's a helicopter shooting on a dog. This is the worst Stormtrooper Academy shooter I've ever seen in my life. He drops grenades. Like, what on earth? I thought he was like guiding that dog towards the Americans or something. Like, he was just a fucker that didn't like America. I don't, because it was stupid. Just, he was a terrible shot. I understand.
It was
shot. It was the premise was the dog bringing the thing.
Yes.
So I understand, but good Lord, it was hard to watch 20 minutes of this guy shooting.
Totally.
And the dog just like, it's like the big ass smile on its face. Like, oh man. I just wanted, and then once the, you know, pilot or the copter lands and he shoots him in the leg and shoots
he shoots
Fuchs. Yeah. Fuchs, right?
Yeah, he shoots Fuchs in the legs.
And then everyone gets down, and from there on out, it's just a slugger fest of what the fuck is going on in this movie.
And also an introduction to probably what is the best performance of the movie, played by the dog. Sensational actor.
It was so.
His name was Jed.
Jed.
Yes.
Jed played. I mean, Jed went all out, man. Method. Yeah. Method.
Probably. He was a scene stealer, especially in the beginning.
Beautiful dog, and then like that scene where he's walking down the hall and he like pretty much just looks totally like I read that he never looked at the camera, like that's why he was such a good dog actor, is that he never looked at the camera. So it was like
he just did his part. And a really cool part about it is that you know that when the dog walks past and there's this shadow that goes like this or whatever, and you can just see the shadow, but like at the same time, like the whole time I've watched this movie like so many times, and I'm sitting here going the whole time, I'm like, that shadow looks like nobody I know in this movie. Like nobody. And it turns out that in the movie that he decided that it was one of the dog trainers that was in the movie that was ushering
Jed. I heard it was John Carpenter.
No, it was just one of the trainers. And he wanted that shadow to be
somebody that you couldn't recognize, basically.
Exactly. So where you're like, who the fuck is that? Because he doesn't look like anybody in the entire movie.
So, okay, so the movie from there goes to like, okay, so what the hell happened at the Norwegian station?
Exactly.
What the fuck? And, you know, I think it's kind of funny because Kurt Russell, or Mac, we'll just call him.
Yeah, Mac.
We all know they become heavily dependent on his instincts in this situation because they keep relying on him later on for some reason. But at the beginning of the movie, he's kind of just portrayed as like either an ignorant idiot, you know, like idiot, or he's just doesn't care and he's just like a smart ass, you know, like when they go to the Norwegian station, he's like, come out, Sweden.
Swedes. It's Norwegian, Mac.
And it's like, this is the guy that like within hours, they're like, Mac, what do we need to do? And he's like, fucking flamethrowers.
He's been drinking scotch like for hours, you know, he shouldn't even be in a helicopter.
Which, by the way, when they get in the Norwegian station, that's the first reveal of the practical makeups in this. When you see the guy who's throat slashed and the blood is all frozen in icicles.
Yep. And just dripping down and frozen that way.
Like at that point, it's like, whoa, okay, that's. I remember seeing that when I was younger and just thinking, geez, that's crazy. And I still thought that when I saw it the other night.
It's interesting the things you pull back from the movie, because there's some crazy ass parts. The part where the thing comes out of the dog and his hands reach up to the ceiling and he creepily pulls himself into the air ducts.
Yeah.
And then they just light that bitch on fire. But that dude's somewhere in the air ducts. And it's like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
What a gnarly fucking thing that is.
I felt that scene was, I mean, it was super awesome. But at the same time, it was hard to convey size.
So wait, are we talking when the dog's...
Yeah.
The dog
so thing? The dog splits his face.
Well, yeah, they put the infected dog with the other dogs in the kiln and or kennel or whatever. And the other dogs know there's something up.
Yeah. Like real soon. Well, he starts to growl all weird. And
then his face
splits open.
Peels open.
Yeah. But then like as he's changing, he's just like, okay, is he massive now or is he smaller now? But then like all of a sudden...
There's no
like,
sense of scale at all.
There's not much of a sense of scale. And then all of a sudden like these hands just like... come out of it like massively, and it like breaks down the ceiling, and it just, like, I guess half of it goes away. And then there's, like, this spider tentacle thing just dangling in midair. And, like, the whole time I'm trying to, like, understand scale of this monster. And that was the only, like, little nitpicky thing that I had about it. I mean, that whole monster right there actually was developed by Stan Winston. It was the only part that Stan Winston did, but everything else was done by
Rob Bottin.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and he got a small credit, a thank you, basically, at the end of the film, because he didn't want to take credit away from him. So that was the only part. But it was, like, so hard for me for some reason to convey scale on how big he really was, because, like, half of it just disappears, and the whole time it was just like, what was this? What was that?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that was the point.
It was an amazing
scene.
The whole scene
was to be like, what the fuck is what is this? Because you hadn't seen anything beforehand, and all of a sudden this thing is just blowing up, and you're like, what is happening? And I think it was more a sense of just what is in this cell.
Well, I mean, the story is based on a novella called Who Goes There. Mm-hmm. And have you ever seen the original Thing from Outer Space?
Well, 1951?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
There's in that version, they find him and bring him back in an ice block, and it's like a Frankenstein kind of thing. And they were kind of paying homage to that, I think, with in the Norwegian base, where they had, like, the big block of ice where, like, it originally had come from. So I know they've made a prequel originally, but I don't even think John Carpenter intentionally did this or whatever, but it seems like they're at least saying, hey, maybe after that original 1951 version, because the novella, I heard that the novella, like, is close, or there's a lot more scenes from John Carpenter's that line up with the novella than the 1951 version.
He pays more homage to the original.
Especially the hot needle scene,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is what John Carpenter, that's what sold him on the idea of doing it, is like that hot needle scene in the book was good enough for him.
It was interesting too, because the original, the book, there was no female actor also, but in the Thing from Another World, the 1951 version, they
instigated a female
love interest, you know, a female. And even in John Carpenter's version, they had a female actress. They had one, and fortunately she was pregnant at the time, so they told her that, you know, well, due to the harsh conditions or whatever, that you know, might be
it's
good
better
idea.
Off. I'm glad for one, you know, for the first time in a long time, it was just guys and being fucked up by I don't know.
Yeah,
I was thankful that there wasn't a woman in it for the first time.
It made things simple.
Yeah,
it's simple. Well, yeah, it simplified things for sure. That's.
But moving on with where this movie goes, like, you know, they torch the thing when it does the meld with the dogs.
So they
have, like, a big corpse now, and Blair just goes ahead and, you know, does an autopsy, which apparently, like, was so realistic practically on set that Wilford Brimley, was, like, the only actor who wasn't really queasy with the idea of doing it, because he himself does some hunting or something like that.
Yeah, they used actual animal organs for it too.
He was the biggest seller of that being so gross, though. He's been in the background just vomiting and coughing in his hands. It looked gross. It must have smelled terrible.
Imagine being in that situation, though. Like, you're just out in the deep snow and
you're autopsying this thing that's infecting people. You know, like,
it's like the most, like, horrific plot line. You're just like, oh my god, there's nothing that I can do for thousands of miles. You know, it's like, it's one of those scenarios, though, when you're sitting there and you're like, we're not going to survive this.
Well, and then they, like, start inserting.
They're in the middle of nowhere, man.
Yeah.
They start inserting the paranoia factor with, I can't remember his name, but the guy that wanders outside and finds, like, the jacket, the piece of Mac's jacket. And then, like, the next time they find him, he's, like, all burned into the ground.
Oh.
The guy with the glasses.
Yeah, Fuchs. Yeah, Fuchs. His name is Fuchs.
Yeah.
And supposedly he lit himself on fire? Was that the story?
Yeah, they thought he, like, had dropped a flare or something like that. Right?
And he burned himself or something like that, yeah.
So they start, like, you know, making you think, like, oh, okay, like, who's either the psycho or infected?
Yeah.
Which almost, like, comes to a point where it's like, how did you, like, you just forget that he's like, anybody could have shoved my jacket in that furnace. Anybody!
Yeah.
Do I do a Kurt Russell impression? And is that a Richard Dreyfuss just came out.
Screw you, I was in Jaws.
He had his own cabin that the door was unlocked. Someone could have thrown his shit but at the same time, it didn't explain the thing taking over people until Brimley did the sweet computer action with the cell going bloop 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 bloop.
The cool eighties graphics.
So we didn't really know that the thing was the thing until that scene, right? Because
he does this, like, you know, he did the autopsy and everything, and then he comes back later after like doing some analysis or whatever, and figures that it's just.
And then basically, his computer tells him that they're fucked if this thing gets off of Antarctica.
And so then they go in the ice thing and they talk. And then while they're talking, Windows watches that guy get eaten. And then shit goes down from there, right? Is that?
Yeah. Well,
Windows is the first one.
It's pretty much shit goes down like since the dog opens its face. You know,
their minds are blown at that point. Oh. But the human paranoia of like who is infected doesn't happen until that. But I was just thinking about, like, Windows. He's a mannequin. Did you know that? Because when he gets eaten later, like, he's flopping around. Like, oh, man.
That was probably one of my favorite scenes. I hated how Windows went out because he was one of my favorite characters in that movie. He's annoying. He had, like, a Richard Dreyfuss voice to me as well.
He was just like paranoid, man.
He's like, in the middle of nowhere. He's like...
The whole scene is like he's just flopping around Gumby. I mean, he's the most rubber band.
He's eaten
by
a mouth. It's just the mouth opens up after this guy's chest and just eats his face. And then there's Windows,
and then that guy Clark.
Clark, yeah.
The dog guy. Who, you know, like, I mean, for what it's worth, the guy isn't lying. Like, he was never, you know, he was never.
He should just got murdered for no reason.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He got murdered because he didn't trust Mac, which probably I wouldn't trust that guy either if he's just his fucking shirt shows up in the furnace and comes in with a blowtorch and he's like, stand back!
Yeah, when they left him outside, he came in and his face was just white and just scary looking and he was probably the thing. I would not trusted that dude either. But he straight shot Clark right in the face. He didn't think twice about it. This badoosh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, you're automatically, when you think about it, you're already automatically segregated because, you know, they found him. They already think that he's the thing. So when he comes in there, he knows nobody trusts him immediately. So he's got what? So he grabs this big thing of TNT and he's got that flare. Yeah. He goes, you burn me, we all go up. Well, and yeah, so it's like he's immediately in charge, you know. So it didn't matter at that point.
But then after they do all the blood tests and then it's revealed that Palmer is infected. His fucking blowtorch doesn't work. So
no, exactly.
And he's just like, coo, 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 and like poop, poop, poop. Childs and maybe somebody else is in the chair, like while Palmer's like morphing into the thing, and he's just like, unfucking tie me. And he's just like, poof, 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 poof. I'm just like, nobody's going to go untie this guy. He must be a real, Childs must be a real asshole.
Yeah, he was left there for sure. He was kind of a real asshole. He was the only one that lived. So that's.
Yeah,
he's the one that lived through it. I mean, I guess they didn't
for the most part.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm not sure. You have to take him at his word that he got lost in the storm because that's all he says. He's like Childs, you know, Max, like, where were you? And he's like, lost in the storm. And it's like,
I thought I saw Blair.
I would just like if I was Mac and I knew that like I wasn't infected, I would probably just shot him. I'd have been like, how do I fucking know?
Yeah.
You know, how can you trust anybody? Where's your blood? Let's do this in the storm.
Well, you know, and let's not forget. I mean, I love the fact that. Every time you see the thing, it evolves in such a magnificent different way. Like first we have the dog.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Are you okay?
Yeah, no.
Okay. You know, hold it at bay. Hold it at bay.
I was trying to.
Yeah, no, hold it at bay.
Trying to burp, but.
Yeah, we're trying to do this. But no, it manifests in such different ways. You know, the dog scene. And then we've got Norris. Which I actually thought, I mean, if you really think about this, Norris is an interesting guy. He's the guy with the chest opening and his big teeth.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one that I think in the end changed at like a biological level. Like, you know, because you can see his change like at the part where like, he goes,
He was Spider-Head too,
yeah,
right?
He goes, You know, like you can tell that he was changing from the inside.
Yeah, he was
Spider-Head. Like the rest of them were probably like, you know, attacked and
you know, got it in some way.
That whole scene, that's just like Rob Bottin, you know, that's probably his like masterpiece, his Norris on the table.
Oh man.
Opening up like a freaking, you know, what do you call him? Venus fly trap.
Yeah.
And then
his head just falls backwards and slides off and then turns
and runs away. It's like, runs away and it's like,
you're all about the sound effects tonight.
Oh my god,
you love this movie. That's
the best. Yeah, dude.
The spider legs were crazy as shit. I'm glad they looked back and saw that spider crawling away, because I was like,
what the fuck?
The whole time I was like, please see it.
Yeah.
But what the fuck? Because like, okay, they saw it. Oh my god.
Well, it's like, I mean, you're watching the whole thing and they're burning him on the table and his head is just like detaching itself and like just,
it's like running away.
Yeah. It's like everything. Every time you see it, it changes and manifests in something that's completely different. Like you're surprised every time you see what's happening during this film.
And you know, it was like practical to the point where they probably heated up some sort of like makeup, you know, latex or whatever, and had it literally like goop off of the, you know, the
I whatever. Believe there was a lot of KY involved in this movie.
Yeah.
There had to been some anyways.
Yeah.
Mm. That was a big beer.
Does anybody else not have a problem? I mean, I guess it's you do what you got to do, but they just locked Blair up in this little tiny room and said, "Fuck you, Blair." Like, we could all be infected, but I mean, I guess he did break the helicopter and try to stab somebody, so it was warranted, kind of. But
was Blair's logic sound? I mean, it might have been a little extreme, but let's say you are Blair and you're on this isolated station with something that, if you trust your computer, could you know, envelop the Earth on its own, which is pretty crazy to think about anyway. But I mean, is the logic like, hey, like, I'm not letting anybody off this. We're all dying here. We're gonna kill this thing. No fucking way. Like, anybody's surviving this.
Yeah.
I actually think that's like decent logic. I mean, I think there's, you know, like hope for other things, but like if you were in a situation where it's like you or the world, you know, like,
well, it's one of those facts that, you know, as a moviegoer, you want to see somebody survive usually.
Yeah.
You know, and this movie, the closing credits goes, there's two people that survive, but you know, let's be honest, the fire is going to go out and they're going to either freeze to death. Or, you know, the thing is one of them and they're going to freeze until, you know, somebody comes and finds them. So, I mean, with that, you know, this is another, it's a suicide squad in the middle of, you know, it's for the better of the world, we've got to kill this thing and we're not going to survive. So we got to do it.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, if I was Mac and I knew I wasn't, I would have killed fucking Childs when he showed up. Would have been like, "Hey, dude, boom!" Because just him up,
right? The weird thing with Blair is the timeline's kind of strange. When did Blair turn into the thing? Because he was obviously the thing at the end.
Okay, so I think
that's a good question.
It's too, been a while.
He was up in that cabin. Well, that's actually a great question.
But he had to have broken the helicopter to get the pieces for his ship. So he was a thing at that moment. Yeah. So there was more than one thing. There was two things at the time because there was like five guys turning into the things while Blair was the thing. So I was kind of confused on was there, can the thing take multiple bodies? So it could pretty soon.
Well, we're just all it just turns them. It just contaminates and changes them. I mean, or whatever.
That's not the worst thing to ever happen. You just turn into yourself and now you're the thing. If we're all the things, but we're ourselves. I mean, that's just life, right?
We could be just things.
Continue.
Now I'm not scared of that movie at all. That movie just blew my mind.
Is this like the Matrix? Like, yeah. We can all be things. We don't even know it.
Even when we're on pods somewhere. No.
It's a true story.
Is that what it is?
Something
that's weird to put it that. I mean, if it's weird, if you think about it.
Well, I think because, you know, the time when they're going out to Blair to give him the test.
You mean the blood test?
Yeah, the blood test. And they walk up to the door and it's open.
Yeah,
that's what I think is when Blair was turned. Like because somebody had to open the door to go in because it was latched.
But like Chris was saying, it was like when did he fuck up the helicopter?
Well, he fucked up the helicopter pretty soon, like right after, you found
exactly.
out
the
blood.
He fucked up the helicopter and then he put the blade to the guy's neck, or he was beating the computers when Windows had blood on his face.
Because I mean, like,
so he was already turning into a thing at that moment. Because
he was a thing. Like, what was his? I mean,
I never understood Blair's timeline. The computer told him that
This infection, if it were to reach a mainland, it would take like 2,100. What it was shortly under like 3 years.
Yeah.
For total mass, you know, contamination. So once he reads that, I think he kind of like flips a lid or something like that.
Well, yeah, but he also, I mean, that's interesting too, because it's like he's probably not a thing if he's,
I don't think at that point.
Yeah, but how could he? He wouldn't have started building a spaceship if he wasn't the thing.
He didn't start building it, I think, until he was locked in there.
Yeah,
I don't know when he really changed.
Because if he was the thing, he wouldn't be destroying stuff.
Was I wrong to assume that when he beat up the helicopter, he took apart from the helicopter for his ship?
At that moment, he
would have been the thing building a ship. He would have taken.
Oh, I agree. I get that.
In the movie, I just assumed he broke the helicopter because he didn't want them to leave. Because if that was the point of,
that's
we're
what
all
I,
gonna
that's
die.
What I assume.
But well, then, that, yeah, that's movie, what I thought too.
Later in the movie, they say, "Oh, he got the helicopter and he put it. That son of a bitch put it on this
and the
tractor, spaceship."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I never understood. I just didn't understand how long.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what it was. It was that he didn't want anybody to leave the time. And I think at that point, to when he went crazy, somehow he got.
I love the fact that Mac never grew. Like there wasn't any growing in this movie. It was pretty much the thing came and then shit happened and they all, like, there was no growing. Mac started a dick. He ended a dick. They were all dicks.
Yeah.
One of my favorite.
He was like still drinking the same bottle of JMB.
Yeah, he was carrying it in his back pocket or something. One of my favorite Mac quotes, just pretty much showing how much of a dick he was, is when he was playing chess with the computer. And then the computer beats him, and he takes his drink and he pours it in the computer, and he's like, cheating bitch.
Yeah.
I was like, he's such a dick. Like, no one's there.
By the way, the only female on this
movie was the voice right there.
Adrian Barbeau, which was his wife.
That's crazy.
Whose wife?
John Carpenter's.
John Carpenter's. Yeah.
No, but it's true, though. You know, it's...
That's what I don't get. It's like, Mac is an asshole. Sure, he's got experience in a helicopter in Vietnam. That's probably why he wears that Yosemite Sam hat. But still, what I'm wondering is, like, you've got a bunch of competent people that are literally all looking at him.
Yeah, but what do you do in that moment? I mean, you look at somebody. You're not looking at a child. Child's a crazy bitch. They kind of said that in the movie. He couldn't control his temper or whatever, so they didn't go to child.
Yeah.
They couldn't go to... The dog handler, because he was obviously could have been the thing.
Clark,
they kind of went to Mac at first because they had to, and then Mac turned into maybe he could have been the thing, and they kind of turned on him until he did the blood test.
Yeah,
well, and so he was kind of like the only real rational person. Yeah, who else would have you have chosen? I mean, Blair was gone.
I just thought it was a little silly that like. He was presented at the beginning, like I was saying, like you were saying, like even I didn't mention that he was like an asshole, but like just like a ignorant dumbass, you know, like Sweden, you know, and it's like, wait, like who is this guy? Like, why is he suddenly like a voice of reason when these people, when like the whole trip through the Norwegian thing, the guy that goes with him, Doc.
I call him Doc.
Yeah,
Doc.
It's basically,
I think,
like,
his name is Copper,
kinda, though. Whatever, Mac. Now they're Norwegian. You're kind of like you dumbass.
Norwegians, not Swedes.
But then at this first sight of an incomprehensible danger, they're like, maybe because they're like, can you fly us out of here? And he's like, no.
Well, at that point, you know, the Norwegian camp is like the closest one. So it's like, you know, how far do you have to go to get somewhere else?
Yeah,
especially in a chopper. I have to bring up, you know, just because the prequel movie, which came out in 2011. I mean, I have to bring that up just for a split second. Have you seen it before?
Seen it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a great movie. I mean, I enjoyed it because, you know, if you watch it back to back, it's like one big movie. But it's really cool to kind of see how everything did kind of go down. And I loved seeing the one thing is that I love to see that you saw what happened to the guy that you brought up earlier with the slit throat and that. I mean, it was fun being able to see all that. And my favorite part was actually seeing the two-headed thing that they dissected.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the two-headed guy, the joining of the two people, you know. I mean, it was cool to see because, you know, the thing, it just does what it does. And it's like there's no rhyme or reason to how it does its thing.
It's just it just transforms, just, man. Yeah. It just does. That's why this movie is so captivating, is because you've never seen this kind of stuff on film before.
Well, and it doesn't to even me, like
it was no, it was new.
It doesn't. Like, it's crazy. Like with the dogs too, it's like it just turns into this like organism, this mass organism that's like, you know, got its tendrils out and latches onto these other organisms and like assimilates itself. You know, or drags them in and turns it into like a big ball of like multiple organisms. Yeah. You know, it's weird.
It makes no sense.
Multiple orgasms, what do you say?
Multiple orgasms, Chris. Something you'd know nothing about.
No, you're right. You're right, Sean.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Connery.
It came. No, it's cool. They did things to the crew. Like, you know, did you know they kept the set really cold? It was super cold. They kept them very uncomfortable. So they had that very uncomfortable look to them. It was very realistic and believable.
As they were filming in LA.
Yeah, they had to do, because I mean, you felt cold. When he came back in and his face was covered in icicles and he looked purple, he looked cold and you felt him being cold.
Yeah.
And that's cool. They did that a couple of different things. They didn't tell the crew who the thing was at the time, so they kind of didn't, you know, kind of give them a little bit of a reaction to
build
it.
Build the paranoia.
Yeah, kind of, you know, they each had a little more paranoia than each. And obviously, if they were turning into the thing, like if they were splitting open and eating Window's face, then they knew. But just certain things like that. It's kind of like a method acting type thing, and I always like to hear about it. It's an interesting way to keep the crew into the movie.
I remember as a kid seeing this as a kid. I just loved the scene when the guy who runs out into the snow and they all chase him down, and he's like mid transformation. He's got
Bennings.
Bennings. Yeah. He's got the Windows. The
two hands.
It's Windows. Yeah. He like comes in. He's like, it's Bennings. It's like, that's all you have to say. Like, why don't you say like, Bennings is fucking transforming into the thing. It's like, Bennings.
Yeah.
Everybody grab a blowtorch. But anyway, yeah. Like when he's sitting there, like.
Exactly.
Like I remember that. Like that struck some nostalgic memories for me. I was like, "Whoa! I remember that as a kid. That was haunting. That's crazy."
This movie. I mean, even it for me, the biggest scene ever is at the very end, and it's just massive. I mean, the floorboards. When they go down into Blair's thing, you know, they throw the dynamite down and destroy the spaceship, and then they go and find the generator, and he's like, "Where's the generator?" It's gone, MacReady. And then it's like, after that, it's like, holy shit. And it's this massive, like, spur on the floor, and then it's this huge 30-foot dog thing.
Yeah.
That actually took, like, 50 technicians to actually pull that scene off, just to control every aspect of it, because then the stomach opens up, and there's this baby dog inside his fucking belly, you know? And you're just like, what the fuck?
Just a bunch of little, like...
Yeah, it's just like, dog. Oh, my God. That's what I mean. It's like every time you see it. I was just
like,
there's
people's hands in those dogs that are like.
Yeah, there's like Stranger Things coming on the wall.
Every time you see it, it's completely different. And that's one of the best things I loved about it. It's like, there was a little bit of similarities. Like, it apparently likes spiders and it likes dog formations, you know. But I mean, because, you know, there's reasons for that. It showed up as a dog, so it's got like that genetic makeup probably or something like that.
I do wish they showed maybe like a picture in the end or something, but they showed the actual ice block that came out and what was inside of it.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty cool to see what the thing actually looked like when it
landed. But that's what the prequel
kind of showed a little bit of that, too.
I didn't remember it showed that.
Yeah.
Because I remember watching it thinking, I wish I could see what
they It shows like. What they had in that ice slab and like how they get it out of there.
Because at the very beginning, it's just like a 2-second blip of a spaceship. You don't know if it's crashing right now or if it crashed. It didn't really explain that very well. And then
he said something like, I think Nora said something in the movie. It's like probably been in the ice for like 250,000 years or something like that.
100,000 years.
But that's 100,000 years?
Buried, yeah.
Oh, never mind. So I'm sorry about that.
That's a note I took. I took one.
Fantastic. That was a great note. But at the same time, that was what really was great about the prequel film is that, you know, like I said, I mean, some of the special effects were good and some not so good. But it did really kind of answer some of those questions. You know, when they dug the slab out of the ice and they brought it there, they actually used... because originally,
watch it now.
Yeah, the studio denied them to make a sequel to the thing because they thought that John Carpenter's film was a masterpiece in their mind, but they did go green light a prequel film. And so with that said, it's like it was cool to be able to see all that, and they used Kurt Russell's scale of his physique to be able to build the set
exactly for the Norwegian camp, because all they had was still shots of the Norwegian camp. A couple still shots here and there, so they had to use his and how high and how big to build the set to make this work.
So they actually go back to the same, it's set in the same area?
Same place? Time.
It starts off when they find that spaceship, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, so like, so it's a pre, you said it's a prequel.
It's literally a prequel.
I've seen it, but I don't,
it's at the same time. And then the dog, that's what the best part I love about the end credits.
Ends with the dog.
The dog.
Oh, it does. Okay. So it's like Rogue One.
Yeah. And the guy jumps into the helicopter with this dude that just shows up randomly. He's like, what the fuck happened? And he's like, chase that fucking dog. And they get in the helicopter and they start chasing this dog.
Yeah.
And that's the way the movie ends. And during the credit scene, it's showing them chasing this dog, shooting it. And that's how.
Well, see, does it explain why he's such a fucking terrible shot?
No, it does not, because he was a terrible shot in the prequel film.
But they're scientists. Okay. I think he's a scientist.
I never knew.
That could explain it.
They research, they don't shoot.
So John Carpenter considers this movie part of his trilogy of apocalypse movies.
Okay.
And this movie, followed by Prince of Darkness, which I've never seen.
I haven't seen that one either.
But the third one is a movie that I want you to see that I keep talking about, and I thought it was Wes Craven, but it's John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness.
I've heard of the movie, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I know. And this is a movie we're going to do eventually, because it's totally a podcastable movie.
Oh, perfect.
But yeah, it made me like go like, oh shit, okay, now it's like I can tie it into I didn't know John. We like Prince Darkness. I don't even know what that is. But
yeah,
John Carpenter didn't film the prequel. No, right?
No.
Because there's, I mean, the novella doesn't really explain. I don't even think the prequel is based on the novella. I think it's just like the prequel's taking what the 51 version did and then what the one did.
Gotcha.
Right.
John Carpenter's and kind of just putting the pieces together.
Like, he did a great job. I mean, this movie was one of my... It's still... I mean, this movie, all it does is pretty much just captivate you and scare the shit out of you. It's rated one of the, like, you know, the top...
And it, like, scares the shit out of you in a way where you're like, okay, well, I'm not on Antarctica. You know, like, I don't think I have to worry about these being in my closet.
It's funny, actually. This movie has become part of, like, the culture in Antarctica.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, all the... Antarctic expeditions that are out there right now or whatever, it's a tradition. They always watch it all the time. You know,
it's like watching an airplane crash movie on the airplane. Like,
yeah, like, why would you do shit like that? I'm out in the middle of the snow. I don't want to watch something. And I'm that kind of guy that I'd be like going, fuck. I don't want to watch this shit out here, because you know now I'm like looking at the guy that's sleeping, you know, two beds down. Like,
the it's fuck? Like watching Titanic on a cruise.
Yeah, you don't. That's like you don't do that shit.
Well, it made me hate dogs. So
no, that's not true. I'm just kidding. It made me feel sorry for dogs, but it also made me realize that it's like, you know, if you are in a situation like that, like, you kind of just have to say, you know, fuck it, man. Like, if I die, then at least I go out killing a little bit of this alien.
That was probably the most depressing part, is they finally figured out that the alien's not trying to do anything now. He just wants to go back to Frozen until someone comes and get, you know, so it's pretty much, well, we're fucked. So
yeah, that's what I mean.
Thanks for the happiness. And
the prospects are, you know, like, grim. Maybe that's why it's like they just sat outside, Childs and
the only place with the fire. This is probably the hottest place around.
pretty much his main mission is just to survive. And, you know, he just wants to get somewhere else. Or she or it. What the fuck would you call that? But that's its main mission. It gets frozen. It wants to get somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And it knows it can't. So, yeah, it just wants to go back to sleep and wait for the rescue team.
Dang, I really want to go home and watch the prequel now. You know, actually, so we do this. We've been doing this once a week, once a podcast, and I'm gonna switch up a little bit. We have a little fan base now, and they've been throwing out questions. And I thought, you know, I thought it'd be fun to kind of switch it up and maybe bring Alan out, Mr. Ald, out of the cupboard, and see if we can do a question from a fan. We've had some pretty cool write-ins, and I was gonna give it a try. So let's get Alan out here. Alan, you in there?
Hey Chris, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good. I usually ask you the questions. I get frustrated pretty quick, and I'm gonna step back.
You gotta be patient, kind of like how I have patience.
No, I know you're a patient man. I'm just going to step back a little bit.
No, I mean, I have patients. They're sick.
I get you, Chris. Okay, back in them.
Some of them have injuries, too.
All right, so I have a little production here. We're going to do it. It's going to be Ask Alan Alda.
It's me.
All right, we have our first question for Alan. It comes from Karen in Idaho. We're going to say thank you to Karen for listening. And the question for you, Alan, is... Alan, do you like dogs? And if so, what is your favorite breed?
Dogs? Dogs are, you know, they're considered man's best friend. I've owned a few in my life. There was a few wild dogs that ended up on the set when we were in NAMM. And some of the locals, I don't want to stereotype, but they threatened to put these dogs through there's a ritual there. I don't want to get too much into it, but you know, I mean, yes, I've owned a few dogs. Dogs are great. My favorite breed, I like a Dalmatian, but you know, to be honest with you, picking a breed of dog is kind of hard not to think about the days when people were picking breeds based on their flavor. Chris,
you enjoy the flavor of dog?
Well, I've been known to indulge in some ethnic foods, Chris, but I didn't find it.
Okay, so just to interrupt you, the answer to your question, Karen, is he loves to eat dogs, and we're gonna leave it at that. Hey, thanks, Alan. Thanks for coming out.
Anytime, guys.
Okay, I guess we're gonna close out this episode with the Dirty Minute, and we'll see you next time with. The Burbs.
Oh, yeah, dude. Fucking the funniest Tom Hanks movie you've ever seen.
I still haven't seen it, so it's going to be a fun watch.
I'm looking forward to that shit like no other, so let's do this. Okay, we'll see you guys next time. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
So fuck me if I'm wrong, but dinosaurs exist, right?
Oh, my God.
So, no? Okay. Yup. Okay. So... let's have breakfast together tomorrow. Shall I call you or nudge you?
Wow.
Fucking stupid.
Yeah, well, at least I'm... you're gone. So my magic watch says you aren't wearing any panties. Oh, you are? Well, it must be an hour fast. Oh, look at this. You're laughing. Okay. Okay.
Whoa!
This is getting kind of ridiculous. You don't need to still be laughing right now. I'm starting to feel... Alright. Fine!
What an idiot!
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cinema Stash Rehash. Be sure to give us some awesome iTunes reviews, like us on Facebook, don't forget to check out past episodes, and join us next time on Cinema Stash Rehash.